Welcome to EAA Radio. As we very regularly do during this block, we're talking to somebody from the National Transportation Safety Board. And today we have Sean Williams. Sean, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Right. Excellent. Now, what is your position with the National Transportation Safety Board?
I'm an air safety investigator. I'm based out of Anchorage, Alaska.
Wow. Have you always lived up there? Did you move up there for the job?
No, I actually come from the East Coast and then moved up for a previous job, and this position opened up, so this is where I wanted to be, and everything worked out great.
Excellent. So what do you do as an air safety investigator?
Being a regional air safety investigator, we cover pretty much all the civil accidents, aviation accidents, in the state of Alaska.
And that's a really big area to deal with.
It's a huge area to deal with.
And there's a lot of additional challenges that Alaska has to deal with their climate, with...
And also there's a higher volume of just air traffic because it's probably about half of the way the people mode of commuting around.
Yeah, it's a huge, huge business up there, and everyone has to get around. And, you know, there's not many roads up there. So it's pretty much aviation, and that's the way it is.
So what is your typical day as an air safety investigator?
If we go on an accident launch, you know, the call comes in, and then the coordination starts. How are we going to get there? Because like you said, it is a big, vast area, and it could be anything from trying to get a helicopter on our own to a Super Cub to riding with the troopers or the Coast Guard. And then once we get there, start the on-scene work and kind of take it from there, however long it takes us to get that done.
Have you had to take survival courses and outdoor courses and rappelling courses and all that to get into some of these areas? Or
no, normally we're not by ourselves. If we go on something like that, what we have is we will go with like the Ketchikan Volunteer Mountain Rescue Squad or the Juneau Mountain Rescue Group, and so those guys will tie our knots and hook up our harnesses and that kind of thing for us.
And Sean, I think I might know the answer to this because we just had a chat with Chairman Christopher Hart yesterday.
Yes, sir.
But for our listeners, can you talk a little bit about the most common reasons here? Are we talking about control, flight, and terrain issues, or what are the things that you're mostly involved with?
We're seeing a lot of loss of control. Mm-hmm. That seems to be pretty prevalent. And up in Alaska lately, or in the past few years, our number of accidents, stall spin accidents, loss of control accidents, come about during hunting season. People get a little complacent when they're out looking for game or something like that and get a little slow, and it's usually not a good outcome.
Sure, sure. So what is the NTSB doing to perform, you know, some outreach or some education for the general aviation group?
Yeah, we're trying to stay involved out there, make sure everybody knows, you know, what's going on. We're trying to push, you know, all these forums and different outreach and speaking engagements to let people know about everything that's going on. And one thing that we're trying to push that people understand is that just because you have your certificate doesn't mean the training stops.
No, that's a good message.
So what kind of additional training are you pushing or resources do you have for the pilots for additional training?
Well, mostly, you know, we're trying to use what's already out there. Let's say you get your private pilot certificate 40 years ago. There's these guys that are out there. I mean, look here. People have been in aviation their whole lives. But we still have to do a flight review every 2 years. Now, there's no requirement for stall and spin training during a flight review. But that's the perfect time to do it. You've already got the instructor in the airplane with you. You know, he's already being paid to be there or whatever you've worked out with him. But you've got him. Tap into that resource. Keep training. Do things that aren't comfortable.
And I think that's absolute great advice because if you're just looking for the easy way to get through your biennial flight review, you're not learning anything.
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that kind of mantra is spoken here for those weekend flyers who decide that their first fly-in of the year is going to be EAA AirVenture, and with the complicated arrival, instead of trying out on a pancake breakfast and maybe even going up with an instructor every once in a while outside of your biennial flight review just to stay current enough. Maybe you would agree that a fair number of those accidents are prevented just from regular maintenance of your skills.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we want people to keep up with those skills because when we start getting into these investigations, that's when we start finding these things. Okay, somebody flew into instrument conditions. Well, when was the last time they logged any instrument time or did anything? Oh, yeah, it was 9 years ago.
And I suppose in Alaska, most of the airports are not served by instrument approach procedure, or?
A lot of them are.
Okay.
Is it all the RNAV? I mean, RNAV has opened up a bunch of airports now to instrument procedures. And
yeah, RNAV has opened up a lot of new capabilities out there.
But of course, if you're in instrument conditions in Alaska, you have the terrain issues to deal with, plus the weather is not always conducive to general aviation flight.
Correct, and that's why it's important to stay current on, you know, the area that you're in too.
Mm-hmm. Are you finding a common demographic for the pilots or the conditions that are leading to these accidents? Are they instrument pilots? Are they private pilots?
It's a vast range. We're seeing everything up there. We can't hammer it down to one thing or another. I mean, when you start going back and you look, a lot of them have their instrument ratings, or you know, they're flying currently 135 or other commercial stuff, but maybe they're just not as proficient in instrument flying as what could be.
Are you the only investigator there, or do you share this with other investigators in that region?
No, there's actually four of us up there plus our region chief. Okay. So we have five total right now, which is fully staffed for us.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of a caseload do you normally have?
The way it works is that we're on call Thursday to Thursday for us. And whatever comes in, whoever's on call gets it. So it could be a slow week. It could be a busy week. I think the most that I've had was earlier this year. I had 16 open cases on my desk.
And I know that NTSB reports are exceedingly detailed. Are you the primary author, or do you collect to a certain point, collect information, write summaries, and then pass it along to National, who finishes the report, or do they just back you up with technical expertise and you finish everything yourself?
So for the way this works is that once we collect all the data from the accident, we actually write the reports. We'll send them, bounce them off from each other to check for, you know, maybe verbiage or something like that. And then it'll go up the chain, and if somebody doesn't like the way something's worded, it'll come back down to us with suggestions or something. But for the most part, it's us. Now, that's not saying that we're experts in everything. You know, growing up, I always heard the term jack of all trades, master of none. You know, we have people in DC that help us, and that's, we have aerospace engineers, we have ATC, we have meteorologists, and we tap into that as much as possible. Those guys are great at what they do. We look at a vast area when we're on scene and we're doing these. Those guys are highly specialized.
And I think that probably explains when we hear in the media, the amount of time an investigation takes, it's months to up to a year, but I don't know that people always understand the detail and the thoroughness with which the NTSB is doing their investigation, but that helps explain the timeline.
Yeah, there's a lot with that. I mean, in that whole year that we're waiting before that report comes out, we're sending the engine off, we're doing teardowns on the engines, we're trying to run them, different investigations, waiting on other reports and things to come in.
Do you interface with other agencies in this work?
Yes. Yes. We, other federal agencies, I mean, we work with the FAA. They're automatic party status to the investigation. We're also working with whatever local agencies. One accident, we just worked with the Forest Service. I've worked with the Park Service and pretty much everything in between.
But the NTSB is in charge.
The NTSB is the lead agency in the investigation. Yes.
Yeah, I understand.
What have you been most amazed by from an investigatory standpoint that can be gleaned from just a pile of wreckage, you know, and be able to trace back, even though some of these components are mangled beyond belief?
Yeah, it's sometimes just the little things that you happen to notice, or you know, you're digging through it and you're like, well, wait, this doesn't belong here. Or this switch is in this position. Well, now you start going back, looking through all the checklists. What checklist would have caused that switch to be in that position? And kind of work backwards all the way to what was going on in that cockpit at the time.
I'm always fascinated by, you can tell which is a pre-crash stress on a component, which is a post-crash stress. That's always been fascinating for me, things like that I guess we've gleaned over a body of investigation over the many decades. We have a great database of knowledge as far as how to examine wreckage in that way and really figure out this happened before, this happened after, and things like that.
Yeah.
So if people want some more information on your top 10 list of things that you're trying to improve safety on, where could they find that?
Check out our website, ntsb.gov. There's all of our most current information and safety alerts and recommendations are all located on that site.
And Sean, we have just a couple of minutes here. What's the one message you would like our listeners to come away with about what the NTSB is doing?
You know, we're just trying to basically help put me out of a job. I mean, when it all boils down, put me out of business. I want there not to be an accident rate.
Mm-hmm. What is the rate increasing or decreasing in general aviation now?
It's staying about the same right now. We haven't seen any large spikes or walls. It's kind of steady.
But these safety initiatives do work because of, for a while there, I was in a position where I was monitoring the accident rates of general aviation. And after some initiatives over a three-year period, we saw that certain things did decrease, especially the one thing the NTSB was pushing along with EAA and other organizations was that transition course for people in their own experimental aircraft, who may have flown like a light aircraft that was not supercharged, didn't have retractable gear, and then they get into a sophisticated home built with retractable gear, high horsepower, unique, one of a kind, and they didn't really take any instruction. And so these things, we can reduce the rates as long as we all focus on safety.
Well, and Sean's made an excellent point early on about training. I mean, you should never waste an opportunity to train, things that just need some more mm-hmm. attention.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we're talking a lot about airplane accidents, and it sounds like this is not a safe way to fly, and flying is just a horrible mode of transportation. But I think we all know better, but if somebody's listening, I mean, can you tell us basically how safe it is to travel? Because I don't want to scare people off by just talking about all of this doom and gloom out here.
No, it's very safe. Look at the total number of operations that happen every year, and like take Alaska daily, the number of operations for the very low accident rate. It's very safe.
And take a look at this today.
Yeah.
All done visually, and we've got
yeah.
Who knows, it's at least 1,000 operations in a day.
All right. Well, if somebody is here on the field today and they want to come talk to somebody from the NTSB or specifically you, where could they come and find you?
We're located over in the Federal Pavilion. We have a big setup over there with some case studies, some videos from previous accidents and flight recorders and stuff that are set up over there for people to look at.
And you can come in and ask you any questions about the top 10 list or...
Absolutely. We have flyers out for all the safety alerts that we've got going on right now.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time for this segment. We do appreciate it. We've been talking to Sean Williams from the National Transportation Safety Board. I'm Wireless Mike, and you're listening to EAA Radio.